since he has no other occupation than to teach devotional service, his name is Advaita Acharya. I'll read on to verse number 40.
वैष्णवेर गुरु तेनो जग तेरा आर्य द्वै नाम मिलन हैला अद्वैता आचार्य.
He is the spiritual master of all devotees and is the most revered personality in the world. By a combination of these two names, his name is Advaita Acharya. Purport, very short purport. Sri Advaita Acharya is the prime spiritual master of the Vaishnavas, and he is worshipable by all Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas must follow in the footsteps of Advaita Acharya, for by so doing, one can actually engage in a devotional service of the Lord.
Kamala nayanera teno yate anga amsha kamalaksha karidhare nama avatamsha.
Since he is a limb or part of the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, he also bears the name Kamalaksha.
Ishvara sarupya paya parishadagana chaturbhuja pitavasa yaiche narayana.
His associates have the same bodily features as the Lord. They all have four arms and are dressed in yellow garments like Narayana.
Advaitacharya Ishvarera Amshavarya Tandra Tattva Nama Guna Sakala Ascharya.
Shri Advaita Acharya is the principal limb of the Supreme Lord. His truths, names and attributes are all wonderful.
Yanhara tulsi jale yanhara hunkare swagana sahite chaitanyera avatare.
He worshipped Krishna with tulsi leaves and water of the Ganges and called for him in a loud voice.
Thus Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared on earth accompanied by his personal associates. Yanra dvara khele prabhu kirtana prachara yanra dvara khele prabhu jagata nistara.
It is through him, Advaita Acharya, that Lord Chaitanya spread the Sankirtan movement and through him that he delivered the world.
Acharya gosa nira guna mahima apara jiva kita kothaya paibika tarapara.
The glory and attributes of Advaita Acharya are unlimited. How can the insignificant living entities fathom them?
Acharya gosai chaitanyera mukhya anga ara eka anga tandra prabhu nityananda.
Shri Advaita Acharya is the principal limb of Lord Chaitanya. Another limb of the Lord is Nityananda Prabhu.
Prabhu rupanga shrivas adi bhakta gana hasta mukha netra anga chakradya astra sam.
The devotees headed by Shrivas are his smaller limbs. They are like his hands, face and eyes, and his disc and other weapons.
Esabalaya Chaitanya Prabhur Vihara Esabalaya Karane Vanchita Prachara.
With all of them, Lord Chaitanya performed his pastimes, and with them he spread his mission.
Madhvendra Purir Iho Shishya I Janne Acharya Gosa Nira Prabhu Guru Karimane.
Thinking, he, Shri Advaita Acharya, is a disciple of Shri Madhvendra Puri, Lord Chaitanya obeys him, respecting him as his spiritual master. Purport. Shri Madhvendra Puri is one of the Acharyas in the disciplic succession from Madhva Acharya. Madhvendra Puri had two principal disciples, Ishvara Puri and Sri Advaita Prabhu. Therefore, the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is a disciplic succession from Madhva Acharya.
This fact has been accepted in the authorized books known as Gaura Ganodesha Dipika and Premeya Ratnavali, as well as by Gopala Guru Goswami. The Gaura Ganodesha Dipika, verse number 22, clearly states the disciplic succession of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas as follows. Lord Brahma is the direct disciple of Vishnu, the Lord of the spiritual sky. His disciple is Narada. Narada's disciple is Vyasa, and Vyasa's disciples are Shukadev Goswami and Madhvacharya. Padmanabha Acharya is the disciple of Madhvacharya, and Narahari is the disciple of Padmanabha Acharya. Madhava is the disciple of Narahari. Akshobhya is the direct disciple of Madhava, and Jayatirtha is the disciple of Akshobhya. Jayatirtha's disciple is Gyanasindhu, and his disciple is Mahanidhi. Vidyanidhi is the disciple of Mahanidhi, and Rajendra is the disciple of Vidyanidhi. Jayadharma, Jayashishirada Kukung Bhagavani ki jaya. Vidyanidhi is the disciple of Mahanidhi, and Rajendra is the disciple of Vidyanidhi. Jayadharma is the disciple of Rajendra. Purushottama is the disciple of Jayadharma. Shriman Lakshupati is the disciple of Vyasatirtha, who is the disciple of Purushottama. And Madhvendrapuri is the disciple of Lakshmipati. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, welcome to today's morning class on the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Shripad Kaviraj Goswami. Generally, we find that when a class carries so many verses, it's very difficult to focus upon the bunch of verses, and we tend to just speak on maybe one or two of the verses. So what I'm going to do today is I'll start off by beginning from verse number 29, and possibly where I find it appropriate to speak on the particular translations. So in verse 29, the name Advaita Acharya is being attributed to the... What are you doing? You can't understand. Thanks, Ravi, I'll remember that. So Advaita Acharya, the name is being given to the son of Labha Devi and Kuvera Pandit. Interestingly, the very word Advaita, so in Sanskrit, the word dvi means two. And there's a particular type of grammar. So this is where the class comes in now. It's very difficult to get Sanskrit out of Sanskrit teachers. It always just comes in. So in Sanskrit grammar, there is a law. Upasargena dhyatvarto balad anyatra niyate ahara vihara parihara vat. It says that by a preposition, you can force a word to have the opposite meaning if mistranslated, or if a particular vowel is placed as a affix. What the hell is he talking about? So the word dvi in Sanskrit means two. Now philosophically, during the renaissance of devotional service in Kali Yuga, the Puranas explain that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in an unmanifested leela, he met with Madhvacharya, Nimbarka Swami, Vishnu Swami. And while doing so, he explained to them how one by one you should all appear in Kali Yuga, beginning with Ramanuja.
And as you appear, you should very, very slowly take the conception of Mayavad, which in fact, Lord Shiva, in the form of Shankara, inundated the entire land of India with, only so that he can bring back people, at least to the point where they begin to accept the authority of the Vedas. Because only previously, and only such a person as Lord Sri Krishna, was able to preach in such a way that he got the entire mass of people to go against the Vedas. And the only main purpose of this was because in the previous age, which had just elapsed, the Dwapar Yuga, people were still accustomed to performing the various Vedic sacrifices, known as the yajñas. Now, the term yajña does not refer to a ceremony of fire. It's very important to understand this. What we see nowadays is not actually a yajna. Technically, you can call it homa, wherein the deity of the Lord is installed in the form of a temporary manifestation, as described by Lord Sri Krishna in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And an homa is an extension of the deity, thus covering the aspects of the Pancharatrika worship of Archana, known as deity worship. So whenever we see a fire sacrifice in our perceptions, that's actually an extension of deity worship. And technically, it's actually not a yajna. In the Kalpa Sutras, which is one of the Vedangas of the Vedas, it describes what a yajna is. And there are seven specific types of rituals which are classified as yajñas, beginning with Agnishthoma, Vajpayee, Rajasuya, Ashwamedha, Chaturmasya, ityadi, etc. Now, in these particular rituals, Sri Krishna, he purposefully established these rituals for the objective of unifying the entire world and making them devotees. And therefore, such sacrifices, known as yajñas, do not just take half an hour or 10 minutes. It takes years and years and years. You find in Ramayana that when Lord Ramachandra performed the Ashwamedha yajna, it took tens and tens of years to perform. Because the entire process is such that it aims to unite the entire world. And therefore, Lord Sri Krishna, even previous to his advent as himself in Dwapara, as the son of Devaki, in various incarnations, he would always encourage his devotees, especially the Raja Rishis, to orchestrate such yajnas for the benefit of the entire world. Because the object is the exact same object as the Sankirtan yajna. And that is why in the Srimad Bhagavatam, yajna sankirtana praye rijanti hi sumedasha. That's why the Srimad Bhagavatam attributes the word yajna to Sankirtan because they perform the very same objective, i.e. unifying the entire world. Now, after the word Mahabharata, Vyasa, he goes on to explain quite elaborately that Yudhishthir Maharaj actually became extremely depressed. So much so that he even abandoned the throne in the presence of his entire family, community, and the entire nation, because he was regretting the massacre of tens of millions of people. Yudhishthir, being Dharmaraj, was actually a Vaishnava at all times, and therefore he continually exhibited compassion and mercy. And therefore, despite following Krishna's order to establish Dharma as an instrument, despite even winning the war of the Mahabharata in Kurukshetra, and despite coming to the steps of the throne during his coronation, he actually just walked straight out just before the Brahmins were about to place the tilak on his head and offer the garlands and begin the Abhisheka. He just couldn't even see that was happening. He was so depressed. He was so unhappy. He wasn't even able to see the presence of the entire, all of his subjects of Hastinapur before him. All he could see was blood. All he could see was destruction. He could hear the voices of millions and millions of people crying because they were all massacred in the very presence of himself. In such thoughts, he just walked out. Everybody was shocked. What is this? The first time ever that a human being who's about to be coronated as the representation of God walks out of his ceremony. Can you imagine doing that on your initiation day? I just can't follow this forward. 16 rounds is going to be too much for me. You just walk out. Now Lord Krishna, being the Antaryami, heard about this. And therefore he decided to personally come all the way to rectify the mind of Yudhishthir. And while doing so, he told Yudhishthir, perform the Ashwamedha Yajna. Now this was just before the advent of Kali. In case you're wondering why I've diverted to Dwapara Yuga, it all makes sense in a few moments. So in the end of Dwapara, when Krishna told Yudhishthir that you must perform the Ashwamedha Yajna, he was shocked. It was like pouring the salt of East London onto a wound of a Bengali mother. Can you imagine what that would do? Because the salt of East London, in case for those who want to know, is really, really bad quality. It makes you even much more upset. He was shocked. He just looked at Krishna as if, I cannot believe you are saying this to me. Because in Ashwamedha Yajna, what really happens? You find a white horse with black ears. You get a few priests, at least 32. And for years and years and years, they perform various sacrifices. They worship the Lord. And they send this horse around the entire world. And any person who says that they do not accept Yudhishthir to perform the Ashwamedha Yajna has to then fight with the soldiers behind the horse. I've just been through that. How can you ask me to do this again? Yudhishthir just collapsed. He could not believe it. First Krishna tells him to fight the war of Mahabharata. And then he tells him to perform Ashwamedha Yajna. Now when Yudhishthir came back to composure, Lord Krishna explained that in the war of the Mahabharata, all of the kings around the world, you see at that time, the monarch was one. In central, I'm sorry for those who may not like to hear this, in central India, in Hastinapur, the land of the elephants, and that monarch had representations around the entire world. Okay? So the various kings of America, Russia, even England, were all representations of the one monarch, Dhritarashtra. And during the war of the Mahabharata, because of favors, now favors in the Vedic culture can really ruin your life. So if you really want to follow the Vedic culture, be really careful, you know. You might just want to follow your own culture sometimes. Bhishma, Karna were all inundated by their favors that they even had to turn against Krishna. You know, because the vow of words considers to be so heavy that you to break it is like committing suicide. Anyway, nowadays culture people don't really think about that. You know, if you say something, who cares? So various kings around the world had all gathered to fight against the Pandava Senas. And therefore, because they were all extinguished, no monarch returned back to their continent and country. And therefore, apart from various borders in India, the entire globe became chaotic. Completely chaotic. Because the monarch was the one who would put into place law and order, dharma and niti. And without the monarch, there was no democracy or anything like that. Without the monarch, the state of affairs will be completely destroyed. And therefore, the entire globe completely changed overnight with no king returning back. Chaos, terrorism, all of the things that we may see glimpses of now were in full scale, rioting. There was just no law and order. You could do whatever you want. You could walk inside somebody's house and just kill the residents, take it over. There was no policing. There was no prison houses. There was completely nothing. Languages changed. There was no educational system. And therefore the Puranas explained that at the beginning of Kali Yuga, Veda Bhashra Nashta Prapto Kali Yuga. Deva Archanam Veda Bhasha Nashta Prapto Kali Yuga. Therefore at the beginning of Kali, the very first two things to be destroyed was the worship of the one God, which the monarch would be instituted to promote, and the language of the Vedas. And without the language of the Vedas, it is impossible to begin understanding the cult of Lord Shri Krishna in his scriptures. Therefore, Krishna said that the only way to reunite the entire world is by performing the Ashwamedha Yajna. And despite performing eventually the Ashwamedha Yajna and the world becoming united, because people were already having gone through a period of chaos, it was very difficult for them to understand the actual purposes of life. And therefore it was extremely, very, very simple to make the mistake of misunderstanding some of the elements of Vedic sacrifices, the last of which was performed by Yudhishthir at the end of Kali. And hence, during the so-called ritual of the Pashu Yajna, or the sacrifice of animals, when various individuals misinterpreted this without proper education, people then began to discredit the Vedas and use Krishna's words to promote such things as the slaughter and eating of sacrificial meat, the drinking of sura, which is a very, very hardcore form of wine and alcohol. Nobody performed samskaras, no reformatory processes. Inundated by such very, very evil and sinful elements in one's body, Gaya Kasya Navallabha, it said that whose body is not dear to who? The Paramatma himself in one's heart would never ever be able to even share with you direction to his lotus feet. Because it's said in the Dharma Shastras that the moment one begins to perform the Abhishek of the Paramatma in one's heart with the streams of alcohol, fifth chapter, Dharma Shastra Manu, and starts to eat various types of animals, and the Lord himself turns away, and the path of devotional service is extremely far for such a soul. Therefore, Krishna appeared as Buddha. And in his appearance of Buddha, rather than try to philosophically revolutionize the people and the world because of being such mundane and such sinful, he therefore said, let us just go against the authority of the Vedas. Let us just clean the slate completely. No study of Vedas. And hence, no performance of Vedic rituals and regulations. And by doing so, at least he managed to keep the sanctity of God's words in the text. Because the worst type of pataka, the worst type of sin in the Vedic culture, is where one misinterprets the words, the very pure words of God, for one's selfish means. Because then it really becomes difficult. And therefore you find that most people outside of, you know, religious institutions, they always attribute war and violence to those who are religious. Because the words of God tend to be such motivation that if you misinterpret it, you will even be willing to commit suicide in the name of God. And therefore terrorism is just a small thing, because the destination of such activities is, you know, the heavens, etc., etc. Therefore, Buddha said, just kick out the Vedas. In the Bhavishyat Purana, when Mahaprabhu met in an unmanifested Aprakata Leela with the four acharyas who was about to request to descend in the age of Kali, he asked them all to very gradually bring people back, one by one, one by one. Firstly, to Vedic acceptance, through Shankara. Now, it's easier to say that you're the master than a servant. You know, people are quite proud of that. Yeah, I don't really mind being a master. So Buddha's philosophy was actually, Shankara's philosophy was actually that actually all of us are supreme divinity. we're all equal, and there is really no reason of worshipping any particular type of God. And if anything, you can actually become a devata, a worshipable God, when you realize your internal attributes of being Brahman. And therefore Shankara preached this and people actually followed because it sounded quite good. The very nature of the soul in the material world is to lord it over material nature. And Shankara was given the opportunity of exploiting that inherent false ego with sanctioning from Veda. And therefore Mayavada philosophy spread like wildfire. People began to read the Vedas. People began to actually adopt various types of sub-religious principles, beginning with lifestyle and diet. You can be glad to know that science like Ayurveda and astrology started to become popular because people were now following Vedic civilization. They felt these sciences to be quite useful for society. But however, this of course is extremely far from the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, slowly by slowly, as Ramanuja, Madhva, Nimbarka, and Vishnu Swami, the acharyas of the Lakshmi, Shri, Brahma, Shiva, and the Kumara Sampradaya, as these representations descended one by one. And interestingly, these are also predicted in the Padma Purana, a very beautiful verse that describes each of these acharyas descending one by one from the order of their original succession teachers. And therefore, at the time of Advaita Acharya, the very name which he is given, by using the very word Advaita, we're touching upon the very origin of the plan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, i.e. to bring around people to the acceptance of the Vedas, i.e. Advaita, the singleness. But then when Madhva appeared to explain on how people are actually different from God while simultaneously being one, and of course summarizing and concluding the philosophy of Chinta Beda Beda Tattva, Advaita Acharya, the very name, hints out to be the beginning of a revolution. A revolution that is going to conclude in the efforts of these four acharyas that have appeared one by one, purely and only to create a platform for Advaita Acharya to invoke the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who would then be able to give the final word of the revelations of God, i.e. Bhakti Yoga, or devotional loving service. And therefore the very word Advaita Acharya hints out to this point. And therefore in this verse, Bhakti Upadesh, since he has no other occupation than to teach devotional service, his name is Advaita Acharya. Further on, Kaviraj Goswami attributes Advaita Acharya to being the origin of the performance of the and the establishing of the Sankirtan Yagya throughout the entire world. He's described as a limb of the Supreme Lord. The discussion sometimes takes place as to why Advaita Acharya is not a part of God, but why is he a limb of God? And the Acharyas explain that because a limb is more intimate, therefore he is a Anga and not a Kala in terms of technicality. We have all heard in the previous verses by the other devotees lecturing that Advaita Acharya is the manifestation of Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu, in the external energy, has two aspects. The Nimitta, which, although is explained by Prabhupada, I believe, as efficiency, Nimitta can also be described as instrumental. And then the second aspect of Upadhan. So Advaita Acharya is the manifestation of Mahavishnu's Upadhan, or second aspect of his external energetical form. And in such a way, Advaita Acharya is being described by Kaviraj Goswami as being actually the Supreme Lord himself. And therefore, as the master of the entire material cosmic manifestation, it is only he who has the ability to actually invoke God himself. We find in the Bhagavatam, when the various demigods decide to invoke Sri Krishna as to descend as the son of Mother Devaki, They all assembled at the ocean of milk to recite the Purusha Sukta to get the attention of Mahavishnu.
And then it was Mahavishnu who in turn instructed that the presence of Sri Krishna is about to descend. So all be prepared for that. So Advaitacharya, he has that ability to access God himself. And therefore, Kaviraj Goswami describes, Yanra Tulsi Jale, Yanra Hunkare, that by offering Tulsi and the waters of Mother Ganga, he invoked the presence of God to descend as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shri Shri Gaur Nithaya Ki Jai. Shri Sitala Makshmanamani Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Bhagwan Ki Jai. And in this verse, the word Hunkare, Prabhupada translates as by a loud voice. Now the word Hunkare itself is a mantra. We find in the Ramayana, when Surpanaka came to request Lord Ram for his hand, obviously being extremely handsome and beautiful. Surpanaka was one of those ladies who were quite desperate for a man, and a man none other than God himself. Because with Surpanaka and Ravana being the descendants of Brahmanas, they were always at least in tune with the qualifications of husband and wife. And therefore Surpanaka was actually quite intelligent from one aspect, you know. You might say that, you know, a lady with a chopped nose isn't really much intelligent. But her intentions were actually quite good, in the sense that we find in the Griha Sutras that Prajapati Vishnu Devata Ka, that such a groom should only be accepted who is representation of God. Because if you accept a groom who doesn't actually represent God, ladies, you're not going to really get far. And your expectations, you know, there's a saying, sorry, Brahmacharis, there's a saying, the Asha Dukhasya Karanam, that expectation breeds misery. Therefore, the Shashas recommend that if a lady is to marry somebody, let the guy at least be in representation of God, in full form, in words and deeds. And therefore, the Vedas say this passage, Prajapati Vishnu Devata Akam. The word Vishnu is used because the groom should be the manifestation of God's energy in this world. And Prajapati is actually quite important, because the very word Prajapati refers to a progenitor. And since the purpose of marriage is to invoke God's representation as a child, therefore the word Prajapati is again emphasizing that since the purpose is such, therefore the husband or the groom should be pure and qualified enough to bring around a representation of God as the child in the womb of the bride. And therefore Surpanaka, remembering these words, approached Lord Ramchandra in the very correct way. When Lord Ramchandra tried to push back, you know, that happens sometimes, especially if you're already married. Well, that should happen if you're married. When you get an offer, you push back. He chanted a mantra called the Hunkar. And while doing so, that mantra is so powerful that it actually pushed Surpanaka back. This is described in the spiritual version of Valmiki's Ramayana, written by Vyasa in the Brahmand Puran, entitled Adhyatma Ramayana. Which is quite interesting, in fact, because it gives all the spiritual aspects of the Ramayana. How Saraswati personally appeared. I find this quite fascinating. How Saraswati personally appeared on the tongue of mantra. And she actually turned the tongue of mantra in such a way that she infiltrated, as we all know, KK against Lord Ramchandra's coronation. So it's actually quite beautiful, the Adhyatma Ramayana, as it explains the various spiritual aspects of the Ramayana. Such questions like why Lord Ram gave up his wife and children and so forth, and the Agni Pariksha is very nicely covered by Vyasa in that particular text, giving all the spiritual meanings. So as he chanted Hunkar, the very word Hum, Surpanaka was pushed back, and she had in fact no choice but to leave off Lord Ram and try the younger brother, Lakshmana. She was quite desperate. So the very word Hunkar is being used in this particular verse of text 34. So powerful, the very word Hunkar, that Advaitacharya, through the process of deity worship, accessed Krishna and brought him into this world in the form of Sachinandana, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And again, it's quite important to note that deity worship performed in this current age is not the same as deity worship performed in Dwapar Yuga. Therefore, when we perform archana, it's very important to note that we do not discredit archana even in the presence of the chanting of the holy name, despite the holy name being the all-in-all, because the performance of archana is pancharatrika. And pancharatrika vidhi is different to the Vedic vidhi, as described in the 11th canto by Lord Sri Krishna. And in pancharatrika vidhi, it's actually instrumental to help one develop purity, at least to the mode of goodness, by which one can then relish the chanting of the holy name. Therefore, the acharyas, beginning with the six Goswamis, wrote books, beginning with the Hari Bhakti Vilas, to encourage devotees to perform pancharatrika archana. And by doing so, one actually becomes closer to purity and purification, and thereby increase one's sadhana and one's level of realization as one chants the holy names. And this was so important that Bhaktisiddhanta, when realizing that he would like to now bring in people from non-Brahminical backgrounds, and the word Brahmana in this situation doesn't just refer to a son or daughter of a Brahmin family, but one with true Brahminical qualification, i.e. purity, cleanliness, truthfulness, austerity, etc. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to reach out to those from non-Brahminical communities and families, he decided to pull out the Pancharatrika mantras and give those at initiation, because he knew that this will be able to replace the absence of the samskaras that the various other people of the various other communities did not go through. And this would be instrumental to help people attain the level of purity. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada and the entire Gaudiya Math, during the initiation ceremonies, we now follow the standard that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established by the giving of Pancharatrika mantras, and of course even the Vedic mantra of Upanayana, along with Harinam Diksha. Thus, constituting three types of initiations, the Bhagavat, the Vedic, and the Pancharatrik, which are all given now by our spiritual masters in ISKCON. Therefore, by the performance of the Pancharatrika worship, we can see on how it is so powerful that Advaita Acharya himself was able to call upon Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to descend. Now, it's quite interesting because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is covered by Kaviraj Goswami through so many various types of scripture revelations to try to describe on how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not only a manifestation of God's energies, but he in fact is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And therefore you find Kaviraj Goswami, he attributes so many types of scriptures to predict and substantiate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as being an avatar of Sri Krishna, and in fact Krishna himself. And therefore in the Adi Lila, throughout the purports, Prabhupada also pulls out so many types of scriptures to try to explain on how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his entire entourage, beginning with Advaita Acharya, Nityananda Prabhu, Srinivas, etc., are in fact all manifestations of God. The very beautiful verse when Bhishma, at the battlefield of Kurukshetra, during his sermon to Yudhishthir, as he recited the Vishnu Sahasranam, or the thousand names of Sri Krishna. Again, sometimes when the word Vishnu is mentioned, we find that Prabhupada translates that Krishna. Because a lot of times, when the word Vishnu is mentioned in the scriptures, it actually refers to Krishna. Krishna in the form of four hands, and not always the manifestation of Karna, Garbha, or Kshirdakshaya Vishnu. So when Bhishma recited the Vishnu Sahasranam, the introduction of that mantra to Yudhishthir begins with Krishna Devata. That in the Vinayoga, which is the introduction to each mantra, each hymn, Bhishma already outlined. Bhishma Sahasranam is a thousand names of Krishna. And therefore, two verses Bhishma dedicated to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Suvarna Varna Hemango Varangas Chandanangadi Sanyasakritchamashanto nishta shanti parayanaha. That Sri Krishna will appear in a golden form. And in that form, his body will be just like molten gold, bedecked with chandan. And he'll be the one incarnation who takes the ashram of sannyas. Now you find that even though we quote from the Mahabharata and many, many other texts, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not just a personality who we have small hints, but in fact his entire pastimes, or at least some of his main pastimes, are also all predicted in the scriptures. I would like to just read one particular pastime, which is predicted in the Puranas, that describes the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I find this particular prediction to be quite beautiful because it describes not just in a verse about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but an entire pastime in just 13 verses. I'm going to summarize it very, very quickly. We find in the Bhavishya Puran, it explains that Ganga Kule Stavam Nityam, that in this verse, once on the banks of the river Ganges, a learned Brahmana began to recite divine poems that he composed to worship Mother Ganges. And after this, the Supreme Personality of God had approached him concerning the hymns which he had composed. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes on to describe Sukritam Purtanamarnam Chashutinam Saramevahi. He says that various aspects in your poem, such as the attributes of Sukrata, or pious actions that you used, Purta, or the word consciousness, and Arna, vital energy, these three principles are indeed the essence of the Vedas. However, you have used these three words in your poems to Mother Ganga incorrectly. Therefore, kindly review your hymns and correct your poem. Now the Brahmana got really upset. Tataha Chareshwara Diman Dushanam. He explains to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you really think my poems are full of fault? Do you know who I am? Digvijayi, conqueror of the entire world, master of Sanskrit, master of Chanda. However, I'll check out my faults because you've highlighted them. And while doing so, he realized that the faults which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had pointed out were actually accurate. And therefore, Mahaprabhu explains, Bhagavan Bhushanam Neva Drishyate, that your failure to recognize the faults in your very composition of hymns to Ganga means that you are unable to analyze the literary sound ornaments to very basic words. And then the Purana describes in so many verses the discussion which ensued between Chaitanya and this particular Brahmana of Kashmir, Keshava Kashmir. And then in the end it says, Lajjitam Swajanam Drishtva Sharada Sarvamangala, that being ashamed in this way, to be pointed out so many faults in his hymns, the mother of goddess of learning, Saraswati, personally appeared to this Brahmana, saying to him, you fool, do you understand who you are dealing with? You have just met Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Krishna Chaitanya Sangya Kaha. You had the opportunity of associating with Krishna himself. I suggest you go back in the very dawn of the morning and beg for forgiveness and become his disciple. And then it explains, Iti Shutva, having heard in this way, Tu Tachishvaha, Krishna Mantra Upasakaha. He went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and received the name of Sri Krishna. Babhuva Vaishnava Sreshta. This particular Brahmana became an extremely elevated Vaishnava. Krishna Chaitanya Sevaka. As a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now these verses are not from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. These are from the Puranas, in particular the Bhavishya Purana. And this is just 13 hymns which describe pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes what happens is, in trying to substantiate the advent of Chaitanya, we quote particular verses and say that God at least has to be predicted. But it's just not that. Incarnations of Godhead have entire pastimes predicted. And that's really what substantiates their descendants. And therefore, in this particular verse, the Bhavishya Puran, in a particular conversation with, I recollect, Tamakrishna Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada, Tamakrishna Maharaj pointed out to Srila Prabhupada that the Bhavishya Puran seems to also predict Lord Jesus Christ. And Prabhupada, he comments with the words, yes, everything in that Purana is perfect, are the actual words he uses. Now, it's quite interesting that scholars in the Vedic kind of context, I'm ashamed to say that, what they tend to do is they tend to try to discredit predictions and other types of very obvious statements that the Vedic scriptures make to say, oh, this has to be interpolated. Oh, this had to have been added. How can these books be so accurate? It's actually quite interesting. Whenever the Vedic scriptures speak about esoteric aspects, which are beyond one understanding, yeah, they're completely fine. But when the scriptures talk about very direct situations, aspects that we can actually perceive and accept as evidence, scholars tend to say, these are the aspects of the scriptures that are interpolated. And therefore you find that even various types of Vaishnavas, they also try to discredit such texts. The problem with discrediting such texts as being interpolated, number one, you're actually repeating the words of those who are anti-Vedic scriptures. Because these are the people who have originated these particular types of sayings. Number two, as we say in London, you're actually shooting yourself in the foot. The head, more like. The eyes, the heart, the soul. Because when you try to discredit such texts, you may not realize how much of science and actuality and facts you're actually also ignoring. And therefore this particular text, because Vyasa, like for example, one particular argument is the Bhavishya Puran. It is unbona fide because it talks too much about the future. It predicts too much. The response is, unfortunately, the actual reason of this text is to predict. If the Bhavishya Puran did not predict anything, then what is the point of it being the Bhavishya Puran? And you know, people actually say this. It's unbelievable. Very interesting to note, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, because Gaura Gopala Prabhu is present, he'll be able to tell you, that in the first few verses of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the verse Anarpita is used. Anarpita Chiram, and it's such a beautiful verse. That verse is in the Bhavishya Puran. You find in the purport, no reference. That verse in the Bhavishya Puran. And then so many verses about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, calling him Yagyamsha. The embodiment of Yajna. By word, by deed. Explanations of his unmanifested Leela. Pastimes of himself. And then even the future that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu laid out, i.e. his legacy. How beautifully described it is of the manifestation of Srila Prabhupada. Mishra desha vamlecha kashyapaneva shashita samskrita shuddharvarnena pramavarnamupagata. A person will appear who will unite the entire world. People of different countries and races, Mishra Desha, who are Shudra by nature, Shudra Varnam, they will become Brahmanas. Brahma Varnu Pagata, Shika Sutra Samadaya Patitva Vedamuttamam. These people of Mishra Deshas, these people of barbaric backgrounds, as this verse describes, Kashyapani Vashashita, the barbaric progeny of Kashyapa, because Parashuram, he donated the entire world to Kashyapa Rishi. Malecha, the word is used. Shika Sutra Samadaya. People of an entire world, by this particular personality, will attain and carry out the Shika, the sacred thread. Patitva Veda Muttamam. They'll be reading the highest types of Veda, i.e. the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yagyescha Puja Yamasur. Deva Deva Shachi Patim. And most importantly, people around the entire world will assemble to worship the son of Mother Sachi. So this is a direct prediction of Prabhupada's work. All of us, ISKCON, International Society of Krishna Consciousness. And it goes on further and further and further. It describes the advent of God in the form of his other devotees for the other types of religions. Goranga Shweta Vastrakam Isha Putra Chamam Vidhi. A person will appear with white dhoti, white clothes, whose mother will be a virgin. Kumari Gharva Sambhavam. He'll appear from the womb of a virgin. And Isha Putram, who'll be called Ishaputra, or the son of, he'll be known as the Son of God. And it goes on to describe so much and so much of the appearance of Jesus Christ. And then we go on to describe about 10, 12, 13, or maybe even 15 verses about the advent of Prophet Muhammad. I have to say, peace be upon him. You know, it's one of the cultures, you've got to say that. It describes Muhammad iti kyata shishaka samanbita, linga chedi shikahina, uchalapi. It describes exactly on how this particular person will establish his religion and the attributes of his religion, i.e. growing beard, singing hymns in an extremely loud way, circumcision, all the various attributes of his culture are described. And in this way, so many other personalities, the personality of Lord Nithyananda Prabhu is also described. Jagannath, his words, when Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri, the various pastimes are there, are also described. So it's very important to note that sometimes, even though scholars around the entire globe or various other cultures, when they try to discredit the Vedas, rule of thumb, don't believe them. In fact, some of our senior devotees say that if Prabhupada did not say it, doubt it. Because you never know, you know, you may just be wrong, or the rest of the world may just be wrong. So it's really important to note that when people try to discredit the scriptures, you may really be also discrediting and renouncing so much beauty of revelations that God himself has given. Therefore, be very, very careful when before we make that mistake of, sorry to say, but blaspheming the literature and persuasions of the Vedic version. It happens quite often, in fact. Always best to have the ability to have your own independent understanding before one goes on to try to discredit particular texts that in fact do speak so much about, especially our Siddhanta, what to speak of God. And in the final verse which we were reading, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described as the person who would sometimes call Advaita Acharya his guru. And Prabhupada, therefore, in the purport, he outlines the entire succession that that ISKCON belongs to, the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And it's quite important to note that sometimes the argument is given between a Diksha and a Siksha Sampradaya. And prominence is sometimes given to a Diksha Sampradaya and not always to a Siksha. On the contrary, for billions and millions of years, it is the Siksha Sampradaya that has only been given the responsibility of carrying out the Lord's words, i.e. the propagation of Vedic literature and the cult of Lord Sri Krishna. And you can find this understanding when you come to the point of realizing on how when Lord Brahma manifested the entire population, he divided the world in particular types of communities called gotras. And within these particular gotras, the only purpose of having these particular communities was to pass on Vedic knowledge. And it's quite interesting to note that at the time when Lord Brahma instituted the systems of gotra, there were in fact no such thing as diksha, but only siksha. You would only, I could say, for thousands, millions of years, all you would really be given is the book and the permission to read the book, i.e. siksha. The permission to read the book was the Upanayana Samskaraha, or the giving of the sacred thread. And the book was the literatures of Sri Krishna. And the entire emphasis was hardcore siksha-based. Extremely hardcore. It was only when individuals desired to worship particular forms of Krishna that diksha mantras were given. So, for example, Sita would receive the Vishnu mantra to worship the Vishnu deity. Nanda Maharaj received the Narasimha mantra to worship the deity of Lord Narasimha. Nowadays, however, diksha is given prominence because of the ritualistic ways in which Brahmanas unfortunately started to promote, i.e. the seminal line and not the siksha line. But history is witness that the siksha line has by far been predominant. And therefore, when we read the purport of Srila Prabhupada given in verse 40, and we read on how all the various acharyas descended Most of them were not Diksha connected, but Siksha connected. That does not show the weakness of the Sampradaya. It in fact reestablishes the strength of the Sampradaya, because that is how it was intended to be, and that is how it was always meant to be. A lack of understanding of history and how the culture was intended to flourish by Sri Krishna sometimes leads to doubt. And therefore clarifications, I believe, always helps. And sometimes you'll find that many arguments actually fall short of reality when in context of culture. So that was my final point upon the purport on how the Sampradaya, despite being a Siksha, is actually strengthened even more so than the so-called importance of it being a formal connection through Diksha. We have exactly 5 minutes before the wedding begins at the temple. Are there any questions for Gaur Gopal Prabhu? Prabhuji, thank you. I can't believe you're here, and I can't believe you let me speak. But if you have any questions, Prabhuji is here to ask. Shall I begin with yourself? Eldest should always go first. Sorry, Prabhu. Or any comments, please?
Penetrating mask.
Sorry, Prabhu.
Today is also the
appearance day of Kandidat Pandit. Yes, yes.
So,
perhaps I've got Commander facing me. yes, today is the absolute appearance of Gadadhar Pandit. And of course, the internal aspects of Krishna's pastimes being the manifestation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's power in this world. The verse coming to my mind is Panchatattvakam Krishnam, which describes how the various forms of the Panchatattva are all connected to Krishna. Won't have too much time to go into that, I'm sorry.
I wish you had been told.
Yeah, well, I should have actually covered it. I focused on Advaita Acharya today. Yes. Any other questions? Did you have a question as well?
Yeah.